The Vintage Gamer, Episode 20. The Awful Green Things from Outer Space!
This show is a member of Goblin, the gaming broadcast network, gbncom.com.
Hello, and welcome to The Vintage Gamer, the podcast that seeks out great games from an earlier era. I'm your host, Jim Van Verth. As always, this show is available via RSS or direct download at www.thevintagegamer.net, or beam directly into your brains, for those of you from the planet Snargaz. This week, I'm going to start off the show with an update. On the last show, which is not something I usually do. I'm going to feature an email from the designer of Moonshot, Van Overbay, which was a bit of a surprise to me. It reads, "I just listened to the podcast review of Moonshot and really enjoyed it. Thanks for the good words and great timing. It was brought to my attention today on BoardGameGeek when I posted a press release about the release of Tranquility Base, the expanded second edition of Moonshot. My site and games are now at http://www.historyinactiongame.com. If it's okay with you, I would like to put a link to your site and the review in my news section. Thanks again." And thanks for that update, Van. I thought that you folks at home might like to know that he and his game have bounced back from the internet void. The base publishing mode is very interesting. He provides the discs representing each mission, fuel counters, pieces, and plastic card sleeves. You print out the rest on your color printer and assemble it. And the total cost is $20. But with the pre-printed components, it's actually a step up from your standard self-published game. You can also get a completely assembled edition for around $60. On top of that, he has a new pirate game coming out that looks kind of interesting as well, which may get a mass market edition. There are no rules up for that yet, but on the BoardGameGeek forums, he's talked about putting them up there so that people can look at them and judge the game. You can see the rules for Tranquility Base if you want, if you really want to check up on me. So that's the big update for the week. I will be back with the game for this week right after this.
Warning, the following information is classified top secret. Well, okay, that's not true, but we think it's cool just to tell you that. The subject of this dossier is Random Signal, a podcast produced from an underground Super Ultra Mondo secret facility located somewhere in the Durham, North Carolina area of the Mid-Atlantic United States. Its host is Jason Adams, codenamed Kryptonaut, called by some as a rebel, a geek, and a spitting image of Jane from Joss Whedon's Firefly. Random Signal is a podcast for the independent musician, offering a platform for music too good for the mainstream music industry. More data can be obtained on the Random Signal at randomsignal.com. It is your mission to fill your podcatching client with many episodes of Random Signal, a podcast that is so totally Airwolf that Ernest Borgnine is starting up a Backstreet Boys tribute band just so he can get an interview on it. Subscribing to Random Signal is your first priority. End of file.
For this one, we're going to go way back. No, further back. Come closer. In 1968, MGM produced a movie called The Green Slime. It has much in common with The Blob or Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. Weird alien object wreaks havoc with humans, objects multiply, humans die, then humans prevail. Actually, you could say the same about Tribbles, ignoring the whole dying part. A young man was influenced by this fine film and decided to create a game based on it, and films of its ilk. Back in the day, Dragon Magazine used to publish mini-games inside. Maybe they still do. I have to confess I don't actually read it anymore. But any case, back in 1980, in Dragon number 28, The Awful Green Things from Outer Space appeared, designed by, and with art by, the inimitable Tom Wom. By the way, I believe that's how you pronounce his name. That's how people were saying it at Origins. If I get it wrong, I'm very sorry. Now, for those not familiar with Tom Wham, his game designs could be described as quirky. The art is cartoony and wacky. The theme is usually silly in some measure. And they are a lot of fun. The Awful Green Things from Outer Space is usually considered his magnum opus, and that's great work for you non-Latin speakers out there. The Awful Green Things in Outer Space, and I know I'm going to get tired of saying that, has a pretty basic theme. One player plays a crew of aliens that is traveling through space, surveying planets, eating zugwarts, which is a kind of space spam, and playing pool. On one planet, they pick up a critter that looks like a three-eyed chicken, and that critter becomes their mascot. And they pick up some green stones. The stones, of course, are eggs, and hatch into the awful green things, which are played by the other player. It is at this point, I should say, Tom Wham says it was based on green slime, not Alien. He actually hadn't seen Alien when he designed this game. So, don't make that mistake. Now, the goal of the crew is to kill all of the awful green things, or at least escape with their lives. The goal of the green things is to kill and eat the crew. Why? Well, because they're awful. Under that theme lies what at its heart is an asymmetric area movement war game. The board represents the ship, with spaces representing various areas in the ship. The mess hall, the dispensary, the sensor array, the bridges. Yes, there are two bridges. And various corridors connecting the rooms together. The crew and green things are represented by cardboard chits, each with a delightful Tom Wham drawing, and three numbers. The number of spaces that character can move in a given turn, the number of dice they can roll to make attacks, and their constitution. And I'll get to how the constitution is used during attacks in a bit. Setup starts with the crew player placing weapon items, which I'll also get to later, in their allotted spaces throughout the ship, and then placing chits representing each crew member. These are also limited to certain starting areas depending on which crew member it is. For example, the captain must start in one of the two bridges. Once the crew is placed, then the monsters can be placed. The monster player rolls one die to determine how many chits to place. The monster chits come in four flavors: eggs, babies, adults, and fragments. Now, fragments aren't placed now. They only come up when monsters are disintegrated. So instead, you start with a certain number of eggs, babies, and adults. Then a die is rolled again to determine which space you start placing monsters. You place one monster in that space, and then after that, monsters must be placed, one per space, next to a space with a monster already, and not in a space with a crew member. After all those are placed, then the game begins with the monster player's turn. Each player's turn is pretty simple. As I said, the monsters, or green things, go first. The first thing they do is grow. That player picks one class of green thing to move up into the next stage of development. So you could turn all of your eggs to babies, or all of your fragments to babies, or all of your babies to adults. At this point, you could also have all of your adults lay an egg. Now, if you run out of one type of chit, that's all you get. You have to pick the ones you want to upgrade. Now, growing is pretty important, as eggs are immobile and defenseless, and babies can only move one space and have two attack dice, and adult green things are dang mean. They have four attack dice and 16 constitution. And as I mentioned, green things can also be blown into smithereens, fragments, which, as I said, act pretty much like eggs in the growing department, but also are a little tougher and have one hit die. The next thing that the green things do is move, and they can move up to the number of spaces in their movement allowance. Pretty simple. Then after that, they can attack, which is where the fun begins. To attack, you take dice equal to the attack number, roll them, and add them up. If the value is greater than or equal to the constitution of the target, then the target's dead. You can also stack an attack with more than one monster at a time, and that gives you more dice for a single attack. But when you do that, you have to remember that each monster can only be used to attack once per turn. So, if say you had five fragments in one room, you could collect them together and roll five dice. Which, if you're the one crewman in that space, that's very bad. Now, if a green thing, or stack of green things, kills a target, the green things then feed, and one of the attacking chits gets to grow. This is a great way to lay eggs everywhere on the ship. You attack with your adults, kill a crew member, and lay an egg. Sounds kind of gross, actually. Alright, well, moving on. Once all the attacks are done, then any stun green things wake up. I haven't described the weapon effects. Yes, I'll get to it. But some weapons can do stun damage, which means that the chit is turned over and can't do anything until this stage in that player's turn. So that's the green thing's turn. Now the crew gets to go. Where the green thing's advantage is that they can spawn incessantly, the crew's advantage is the weapons. Remember those? So the crew's first action is that each crew member can pick up a weapon in the same room that they're in. These are just items around the ship that are located in certain areas. So examples of weapons are obvious ones like a stun gun or a gas grenade or a pool stick or a knife. And there are less obvious ones like a fire extinguisher or a can of exhorts. Remember, that's space spam. Some items only affect a single monster, and others, like the fire extinguisher and communications beamer, affect all the monsters in a particular area. Some can only be used by a crew member in their current room, like the blowtorch, and some can be thrown or fired into an adjoining room or via line of sight, which is basically until a bulkhead or hatch is reached. Barrels of rocket fuel are pretty cool. They can be ignited and cause the blast that is only stopped by hatches. They do 5 dice of damage to any crew in the way, but they will affect all monsters in the blast radius as well. As you can see, there's a fair amount of variety in the types of weapons available. And blowing stuff up is always cool. But a weapon is only as good as the damage it does to your enemies. And unfortunately, because the green things are bizarre and unknown creatures, the effect that any items around the ship will have is also unknown until you try it. So the crew has to test the weapons out to find out what they do. To do this, the weapon has to be used against a creature during the attack phase. Then a chit is drawn and placed on a slot on the board corresponding to that weapon. And this is the effect that the weapon has for the rest of the game. This can be as useful as 5 dice to kill, which is very nice for an area effect weapon, to somewhat useful, like shrinking the monsters. For example, adults regress to babies, babies regress to eggs, etc. Or 3 dice to kill, or 5 dice to stun. To utterly dangerous, for the crew, that is, like growing the creature. Or worse still, breaking it into 1 die of fragments. If you get a weapon like that, and particularly if you fire it in an area and there's lots of monsters, that's running for the hatches time right there. Other than the dice, the weapons are the biggest element of chance in the game. If the crew gets stuck with lousy weapon effects, the game's pretty much over for them. If they get some nice area effects, then the game can be over quickly for the green things. So if you are the crew, you want to draw well at this point. There is one important weapon I didn't really get into, and that's the electric fence. Any monster that encounters the electric fence must stop in that space, and then the effect occurs. So even if the effect is kind of lousy, well, all right, you don't want to place that if it creates fragments, but it's still very good for blocking corridors and slowing the monster's progress. Crew must also stop at the electric fence, but don't get affected by it. To place an electric fence, the crew member must stay there for an entire turn without attacking, so there is some disadvantage there. So that's picking up weapons. The remainder of the crew's turn is the same as the monster's. You move, attack, and wake up. And during the attack phase is when you actually use the weapons against the monsters to find out what they do. Now, you can also use your attack dice by doing hand-to-hand combat. Most of the crew doesn't have a lot of attack dice. There are some, like the robot or the captain and I think the first mate, that have a decent amount of attack dice that can do hand-to-hand combat. But most of them, you're going to want to pick up weapons instead. Now, clearly, if the crew kills all the monsters, or monsters kill all the crew, that side wins. If all looks lost for the crew, you can give up and concede the game, or, which is more fun, the crew may try to escape by hitting the lifeboats and setting the ship on self-destruct. Hey, it's tradition, right? In this case, the captain, first officer, engineering officer, or pilot must be in one of the bridges for a single turn without doing anything and announce that the self-destruct sequence has begun. And yes, you are sacrificing one of these for the rest of the crew. Once the turn is up, the ship is destroyed, and anyone and anything on board is killed. The monster player automatically gets 55 and a half, yes, and a half, points, and the crew player gets points equal to the constitution of the crew that survives in the lifeboat. If the crew doesn't actually manage to get the ship blown up, but the monsters still take over, the monster player gets 111 points. No, I don't know why it's 111. And the winner is the one with the most points. Like I said, usually it doesn't end up like that. Usually one player just says, oh, well, I give up, you win, and concedes the game. Now, if you're curious as to what happens to the crew in the lifeboats, you can play a little choose your adventure kind of paragraph-based game, more like a sentence-based game, because it's like a sentence per thing. Anyway, which is an epilogue, and it covers what happens to each escape pod. If they get back to the homeworld, hooray! You don't actually win the game necessarily, but at least you know what happens. In fact, if you just want to play a solitaire game, you can skip the entire first part, which some people would actually say is the game, but never mind that. You roll dice to determine how many crews survive, and then just do the epilogue. And if you want to, you can actually try this out on Tom Wham's website. Fun for the kiddies for hours. Strategy for both sides is very different, as you might expect. The object of the green things is to kill off crew members as fast as possible, as the crew can't regenerate. Duh. If the crew manages to fight back, then you retreat to some remote areas, lay eggs, and start in again. It's the standard alien technique. It's too bad they don't have the face suckers in this one. I suppose the killing and eating thing is very similar. But again, the game is not based on alien. The crew, on the other hand, needs to stay away from the green things until some killing weapons can be found. Then those need to make their way into the hands of the weaker crew. The robot, I mentioned the robot earlier, it's actually the strongest member of the crew, and is great for taking out green things, but it can only move one space per turn, so it's kind of slow. Still, usually the green things will want to stay away from it, and usually the crew player will want to drive it towards the green things. As mentioned, The Awful Green Things from Outer Space was originally published by TSR in Dragon Magazine, and was popular enough to end up in an actual boxed version. When TSR eventually collapsed and was bought out by WotC, the publishing rights reverted to Tom Wham, and he had it republished through Steve Jackson Games. As with many games that have switched publishers, there are changes that have crept into the rules through the years. In the original TSR game, the crew could find fire extinguishers and electric fences in any room. In the first Steve Jackson version, and the basic rules for the latest version, extinguishers and fences are limited to certain rooms, just like the other weapons and items. As these are two potentially powerful area effect weapons, this kind of hurts the crew greatly, and in the games I've played with those rules, the green things pretty much easily overwhelm the crew. I've played both the crew and the green things, and it's just a rout. There is one minor adjustment recommended, which does allow the comm beamer to have two settings, and thus two possible effects, but I don't think that really counterbalances the new advantage given the monsters. Now, the latest Steve Jackson version adds some new rules, originally published in Dragon as well, which apparently do help in the balance issue. I haven't played them myself, so I'm just going to take the word of a website by Stefano Sullivan. Basically, these add rules for dueling outside the ship, and add some new counters for cargo movers, which allow the crew to fight monsters on the outside of the ship fairly safely, and jet suits, which do much the same, but aren't as powerful. The escape pods also have pieces, and can be used with the crew flying around, firing from their hatches, and using their jets as weapons, with the same effect as a barrel of rocket fuel. It does sound like it swings the balance in the crew's favor, but I'm actually not sure that's as fun. If I'm the crew, I'd rather feel like I'm battling against overwhelming odds, only to ultimately triumph. Based on that thought, next time I think I'd rather play with the original rules and see how that goes. That is, the rules where you can pick up extinguishers and fences pretty much anywhere. There are some further variant rules on the Steve Jackson website called Revenge of the Awful Green Things, which are by Tom Rhodes and James Sterrett. These add additional monster stages called Megadults, hidden monsters, hidden eggs, new weapon effects, decompression, and different effects on monsters for their presence in the mess hall and eating squirts. I can't really comment on their quality as I haven't tried them, but they do look kind of interesting, and obviously you don't have to use all of them. You can cherry-pick from the list there. And apparently a guy named Brian Berg Bjerregaard Jensen also has some variant rules out there, but the page link that I found is dead, and I haven't been able to actually track them down. If you do know where those rules are, please let me know, and I will put the link in the show notes. So in conclusion, if you like games with a lot of flavor, or like war games with a wacky theme, and don't mind a little randomness, then I highly recommend The Awful Green Things from Outer Space. It's currently listed as out of print on the Steve Jackson site, but you can usually find copies online for reasonable prices. And I do know of one guy who's thinking of selling his TSR copy. Not me, another guy. So if you're interested, let me know. I'll be right back with some feedback items after this.
Hi there, friend. Welcome to the Dragon's Landing Inn. Come in from the cold and warm yourself by the fire.
Wow, thanks a lot. It's downright cold out there.
If you're looking for something to eat, we've got a feast of ideas and advice for tabletop RPG players over there.
Uh-huh.
And in the back room, we have interviews with gaming industry insiders.
Right.
And out here in the common room, we have lots of good hearty discussion about all kinds of RPGs and accessories. So, what can I get for you?
One podcast later.
Little mug of beer wouldn't do us any harm. No little mug of beer wouldn't do us any harm.
Visit the Dragon's Landing podcast at www.dragonslanding.com.
Got a few items of feedback I'd like to read here. The first is another comment on the Moonshot review from Art Gorski. He says, "Another Race to the Moon game that you didn't mention is Liftoff." And he gives a link on BoardGameGeek for that. I'll stick that in the show notes. It's a board game where up to four players, US, USSR, China, Europe, race to the moon. Completing simple missions like Mercury make the odds of success better in later, more dangerous attempts like Apollo. You actually fly each mission on the board, and disasters can strike at each phase of the mission. For example, the translunar burn fails, so your Apollo capsule soars off into the void. Yikes! Love the podcast. Yeah, that description actually fits my initial notions of what Moonshot was going to be like. And actually think I like the idea of forcing you to do the Mercury missions first. I mean, I suppose you could do the Apollo missions. It would just be a little more dangerous, as you say. In Moonshot, you can actually do the Apollo missions first without too much danger. And if you get through that, that does give you a pretty good fuel advantage. So thanks for the recommendation, and thanks for listening. Brad in Blue Springs wrote a very long email about his trials and tribulations with Barbarian Prince, which I covered back in show, is it 11 or 9? Or, well, you know, the show numbers changed. Back there. Later in his email, he says, "Anyway, the idea of a solo board game experience is now very appealing to me, so I've been trying to find lists of board games, or card games, I can play alone. I was looking through a price list of Avalon Hill games and noticed that Star Marines has a solo option, and I already own it. So I dug that one out, also never played it, and read the rules, so I can't wait to play that one also. Now, I'm wondering, just how many solo board games are there out there, and which ones are considered the best? Maybe a topic for a future podcast. Or if you can just think of a couple, maybe you could fire them back at me and I could track them down. At the very least, maybe as you go through games in future podcasts, you might point out if any of them has solo rule variants from time to time. It would be much appreciated." Now, I wrote Brad a response to this, which included a pointer to a geek list that listeners might be interested in checking out, and I will include that in the show notes. One thing I didn't mention to him is that Joe Stedman actually covered this topic in a top 10 list on the Dice Tower, so that might be worth checking out as well. And as far as covering solo games on this podcast, well, I actually just mentioned a solo variant for Awful Green Things in Outer Space. And I'm also still planning on doing Star Smuggler at some point, and I'd love to do Ambush if I could ever get my hands on a reasonably priced copy. And whenever I print out the English rules, I will be doing Tales of the Arabian Nights. That one looks pretty cool. It's a paragraph-based game on steroids, and there are a couple of solo variants there. I will just say in conclusion, I believe that a lot of war games have solo variants out there. Of course, the problem with war games is that it's often hard to find another player to play with you, so that's why a lot of the companies will just throw in a solo variant, so you can buy the game and play it yourself. Finally, John Smarr writes, "As I whittle away in the dungeon of medical records, I have the ever-trusty iPod to keep me company. Ah, yes, I had forgotten about your evil beer experience. Wah-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha! Midas wasn't supposed to touch you that way. Or any other way." I have nothing to say to that. Well, nothing I can say in the air, anyway. John, by the way, is a doctor and studies disgusting secretions, which is very appropriate to this game. And on that note, I think I'll end feedback. Thanks again for all the feedback, whether I read it here or not. And of course, if you have feedback, you can send that via email to vintagejim@gmail.com or Skype via username jvsquare, or you can leave comments on the website, which is www.thevintagegamer.net. Or you can comment on the forum thread at BoardGameGeek. And if you're on the Geek, I would greatly appreciate it if you can give that forum thread a thumbs up. And thus concludes yet another slimy episode of The Vintage Gamer. Our theme is performed by the trio Music of the Spheres and available on the album of the same name at magnatune.com. Your humble host is Jim Van Verth. The next episode of The Vintage Gamer returns to the world of paper RPGs with Dragon Quest. Until then, keep trying those new games, but don't forget to play the old ones. Thanks for listening.